Hey, Damashek here. Please check out the new episode of the Dave Damashek Football Program presented by McDonald's. The great Jonah Carey and I have a rangy conversation, and handsome Hank Patrick Claibon and I kibitz about who should start for the L.A. Rams, and we look at Hard Knocks and break down the premiere episode, the L.A. Rams, Case Keenum versus Jared Goff, all that. Check it out on iTunes or NFL.com/podcast.
The Around the NFL podcast has fallen down a well. Help.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan. Mark, do you remember the 1980s, like, falling down a well story seemed to pop up every few months?
Yeah, I mean, I think people back then still had wells on their properties in some cases
that
were
wells.
Not being, you know, used.
That's one of my favorite money drops of all time. It's really testing the bounds of what a money drop can be, and I love it.
It's kind of going off in its own world in a way.
Greg wrote it.
It's falling into itself.
I wish. Great book about falling down a well, Wind Up Bird Chronicle. There you go.
Are we really?
Are you for real?
It's not really about falling down a well, but that's a big part of it.
It's riveting.
Are we ready to talk about the guy that's been outside our building for 6 months now? There's a crazy person that's been picketing NFL Network Studios. And the latest sign that he has up. Well, first of all, my favorite sign remains NFL, comma. And these are on Washington Boulevard, all the cars in rush hour. NFL, comma, sex with no Vaseline.
His signs not only are getting more bold and audacious, but just more raunchy.
Yeah. And then here's one I thought Brandon – you would be interested by, because of your profession, NFL producers belong in jail. What did you think about that?
I've been told to give no comment on this situation, so I'm not going to.
I don't know.
I think he's pointing not to I don't think he means a dyed-in-the-wool, like, day-by-day producer, but, like, the high-up decision-makers.
Well, for some context,
very angry.
He seems to be upset that he believes he had an idea that was taken by the NFL for the show that would ultimately become undrafted.
Yes, Greg. Good context. He has a sign that says, NFL, pay me my $25 million. So he believes...
$25 million? I've never even heard of it.
Well, he's a crazy person.
You've never heard of the show or the...
Never even heard of that show.
You know what? It's a pretty good show. It's on NFL Network.
Good.
It's a good show.
No, it is.
Underrated show.
It's solid. It's a solid show.
On Wes.
Anyway, so that guy, if you're listening... Because I assume there's a lot of time to kill out there. He spends literally all day sitting on the sidewalk outside our building picketing this business.
He reads the same book every day.
Yeah, the Bible.
Right.
That's another sign. He's reading the Bible. Next thing you know, it's going to be Catcher in the Rye. You just stay away from that guy. That's
if
all.
I was reading the Bible every day, I might not be making a sign about sex with no Vaseline.
Yeah,
we'll save that for the... for the theology podcast.
Coming up later in the offseason, the following offseason. Not this upcoming offseason after the 2016 season. After 2017 season, we will have our long-awaited theology
coming
podcast.
Up.
This is the Monday edition of the Around the NFL podcast. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Three more shows coming up this week as we continue to hurtle towards actual football. Right now, we're in the midst now of the preseason. And preseason week 1 of 4 is now in the books, so we will spend a sizable portion of today's podcast talking about, again, not so much the games and the results, who cares, but some of the things within the games within the games, and of course, this is football, injuries that came out of those games, so we'll get into all that. Then we will continue our division-by-division preview. Arriba! This time on the NFC North. NFC North. Greg, you're excited.
It's quite a division. Black and blue.
I'll try this again. Mark, I know you're excited.
I am thrilled to be discussing the NFC North.
I am.
Wes, I know you're excited.
Get me to September, please.
Fair enough. But before we do that, we check behind the glass. What is up, Irish?
I'm excited to talk NFC North. I don't know. I mean... I'm excited to hear what you guys have to say about it. Break it down.
Yeah, but you know what? Even you and your voice, I could tell,
Well, I have a very monotone voice. The only time I've ever showed any, excitement was after we won the championship. That was it.
Yeah, there was a joyfulness to your personality that
Your conceit, Dan, is that no one really is excited about the NFC North at all.
I don't
I
know.
Am.
I think
we all are.
I guess, I don't know, maybe people aren't excited to talk about. Maybe the segment people aren't excited
about. No, that, I think you're showing some of your – we had a great time talking to NFC East. I thought that was a good segment.
I did too. I enjoyed it.
I thought that was a good segment.
Don't turn it back on me, brah.
I think he's speaking about the North specifically, not the East. We know Dan likes the East.
Love the
NFC East. Had a lot going on.
The North is another favorite of mine. A lot of interesting, intriguing teams in the North Division. Let's do some news.
We're supposed to be a unit.
Suck my unit.
Yes, that is from – good job, Irish. That is from Tropic Thunder. I watched that yesterday. Sent out a tweet that I thought it was one of the all-time underrated comedies. Got a ton of feedback. A lot of people agreeing that Tropic Thunder, criminally underrated. Anybody agree, disagree?
I liked it. I wouldn't. I don't know if it's. I feel that strongly about it, but I'll roll with you on
this. I
think
it's wonderful. I think it's subversive.
You called Aaron Donald underrated,
original.
And I don't know if I believe that he's underrated at this stage, but I see where you're going with it.
Yeah, well, that was a good way to, you know, kind of connect.
Yeah, you were making your connection.
Connection.
Yeah.
I think he's underrated, Aaron Donald, just because a lot of people don't even really know who he is.
Yeah, probably on a national level, he's not known. Like, from the casual sports fan. I don't know. Like,
you football heads in here, yeah. You guys.
Oh, no, I mean, I hear what you're saying. We know him and others don't, but I don't know. He's a star.
He's underrated on the top 100 list.
Ooh, yeah.
Someone that's not on the top 100 list but hopes to be one day is Carson Wentz, the Philadelphia Eagles rookie quarterback who played his first professional game, did not go too well. He suffered a hairline fracture in his ribs during Thursday's preseason game against the Tampa Bay Bucks. He took it on a pretty nasty hit right to the midsection, the type of hit that, you know, maybe he wasn't taking in college, but welcome to the show, buddy. And you are now, your preseason is in doubt, which, Mark, I'll start with you here because you just last week predicted not only that Carson Wentz is going to find his way into the lineup in a relatively soon manner, he's going to thrive. No preseason. That hurts.
Well, injuries would, you know, alter predictions like that. But Wentz had injury issues in college. You know, they knew that coming in. And if you watch that game, he made some plays. He looked inexperienced in other situations, but he took two or three megaton hits. One where Greg and I were there that night, where he was lifted into the air, basically, and tossed to the ground and just was lying there. But he kept getting back up. I think he's a tough player, but I'm not surprised he came out of that game dinged up.
Hurts a lot because he's gonna be what, the scout team quarterback once the season starts. You're only gonna get so many valuable reps in a preseason situation or in practice like he is. You know, splitting it up, you can't really make up that time. I think it makes him less likely to be starting. Sorry, you know, I think it hurts his chances of starting week 7, week 8 if the Eagles season is not going well. It doesn't mean he won't be, but it hurts. He could have put some good tape out there this month.
You don't want to make too much out of one preseason game, but after seeing his mechanical flaws in the preseason opener, I didn't expect him to play this year at all.
Mm. Well, I'll tell you someone else who didn't look too good, Chase Daniel.
No. Also, they're wide receivers who cannot get open whatsoever.
Right, that's the thing. It was a small sample. Offensive line and receivers are bad there, but we'll have to see. Like, because if that's a situation where Sam Bradford is really struggling to make that offense move at all, maybe they're not going to want to put Carson Wentz out there behind a bad line with bad receivers.
It's possible that I made a prediction in August that's going to go completely stormy.
It happens. It happens. And also, I think, Greg, you were predicting magic for the Eagles this year.
I did pick them to win the division.
Feeling a little weird about that now? Is the season starting to take a little bit of shape?
No, because all
of this, that offense, are you?
All of this, I'm not confident in the offense. I think the defense is really going to be good. I think that the
about a 9-6 wins in Philly this winter.
I think there's going to be a bad division in general. And I tend to think most of August from a team level, let's not get too carried away. Let's see what happens week one and on.
Bad news for the New Orleans Saints, who were counting on their first-round defensive tackle, Sheldon Rankins, to make an immediate impact, but it's going to have to wait. He was carted off the field during Monday's practice with what the team believes to be a broken fibula based on initial tests, a source of the injury told Rap Sheet. He was injured during a goal line drill. The rookie will undergo more testing, but surgery is expected this week, according to Rappaport, who noted that Rankins is a candidate for the good old IR boomerang. Wes, how much does this hurt a Saints D that needs to get better?
Well, they're lucky he's not out for the season, but they were counting on him and at one point this offseason, Kakaha, to both play major roles, and now two of their most talented defensive young defensive stars are out. So I think that's a major issue.
Not to mention Stephon Anthony is coming off an injury, might be out for the whole preseason too. Another top 50 pick that they took. They were counting on him to start. Nick Fairley's there. They have a guy they're really excited about, Sean Payton, Tyler Davison, I believe, that is starting a fifth-round guy from a year ago. But they're thin. You're right.
You wonder where the pass rush is going to come from.
Well, this was a draft for need situation with Sheldon Rankins, and they brought him in as one of the best college interior pass rushers around, and he was playing great. Picked off Tom Brady in their dual practices, played well in the game against the Patriots, and then bang, he's gone.
Moving on, a little bit of NFL history. Former Seahawks safety Kenny Easley has been selected as a senior finalist for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. This is a player that was one of the top young stars of the 1980s, won Defensive Rookie of the Year honors in 81, Defensive Player of the Year in 83, and Defensive Player of the Year in 1984. And you wonder, why are we talking about this man? It's because Chris Wessling has something he wants to get off his chest. And when a football historian like Wes wants to talk about Kenny Easley, God damn it, we're going to talk about him. Wes.
If you're of a certain age as a football fan, and Mark and I are at that age, if you're in your early 40s, you remember Kenny Easley as a difference maker in the 1980s who was on the Ronnie Lott career path and probably honored more than Ronnie Lott. The Rookie of the Year, 83 AFC Defensive Player of the Year, 84 NFL Defensive Player of the Year. I saw one Seahawks blog describe him as basically a super safety who was Cam Chancellor's bone-jarring physicality with Earl Thomas's instincts in the back end, which is as high praise as you can get. But that's who Kenny Easley was in the 1980s. And if we're talking about valuing transcendence over longevity, Kenny Easley was as transcendent as a safety gets for a five-year period.
Yeah, I mean, we took the Hall of Fame to task on a number of, you know, how they would deal with certain players of today down the road. This is an example of them getting it right. And it was Ronnie Lott who tweeted minutes after the announcement that this was a special player. He was right up there with Ronnie Lott, but he just had a shorter career, Terrell Davis-like.
Not a lot of safeties in the NFL, in the Hall of Fame. To be clear, this doesn't mean he is in the Hall of Fame. He still has to be voted with the other finalists in January, but most of them that make it this far and get chosen by the seniors committee, they do make it in, almost all of them.
And if not he always, if he doesn't get in, this show never mentions the Hall of Fame ever again.
Whoa.
I mean, bold. Let's be real. Get it done.
That's probably not true, but
okay.
Still, like,
but it's you know, yeah. What I said about Carson Wentz a week ago wasn't true, so I'll continue to spout falsities.
All right, moving on. Here we go, guys. That's what's happening in the news. Let's now dig into Friday, Saturday, and Sunday preseason action. Let's start with Friday night. We'll go in order of the days, Greg. Friday into Saturday into Sunday. That's the order of days. And why don't we start with Mark's team there on the old lake of Erie. Is that correct?
Well, the game played in Green Bay, but yes.
But that's the team.
Yes, the team is based. Located near Lake Erie.
Yes, absolutely.
Cleveland Browns.
Now, the game was being played in Wisconsin at Lambeau
Superior.
Field, right near Lake Superior. I was going to say that. Took it right out of my mouth. And listen, the RG3 reclamation project continues. We're going to get excited about this because he made a couple plays and he hit Terrell Pryor, of all people, downfield on a big throw, Mark. But then he also made some RG3 type plays. What were your takeaways from your first live action experience as an RG3 fan?
Well, all right, back the truck up. But I'll tell you what, I came away very concerned with specifically one thing. Their offensive line, they've obviously lost Mitchell Schwartz. They lost Alex Mack. And right away you learn, and it's one game, so I don't want to overreact, but you cannot replace Alex Mack with almost anyone in the league outside of four or five centers maybe. And Cam Irvin, he allowed a couple of guys through that ended up on big hits on RG3. He, I believe, had 11 passes or attempts and was hit three times very hard. We're not going to be talking about RG3 for long if this line doesn't learn how to protect the quarterback better. He was on the run, and, you know, RG3, you nailed it. He did one or two good things. You can tell they want to be a vertical offense. I think when they do have Josh Gordon and they have Corey Coleman on the field who were not, they're going to try to do that because this team's going to have to score points. The other thing I looked at was that Green Bay's quarterback, undrafted, Joe Callahan looked like he was sent straight down from heaven during parts of that game. Shredding Cleveland's defense at will. He was shredding Cleveland's defense at will.
Wasn't he
playing against
a bunch of like future bouncers and UPS
drivers? He looked like he won a competition to play with the pros or something. I don't know.
Matt Flynn's little brother.
If he looked like Matt Flynn's younger brother, he had long drives against Cleveland's defense. And outside of a couple young players, that secondary is going to give up points. I'd be very concerned about the way Cleveland's team is constructed right now.
We know Cleveland's got a
long
way to go.
So the expectations need to be low.
But if we focus on RG3 a little longer here, one thing I noticed, I watch NFL.com's doing a nice job. They're putting out videos of every throw of some of these guys. So I watched the RG3 reel, and two of his big completions, right after he throws the ball, they cut back to him, and he's peeling himself off the ground.
Right.
Doing that move where he's laying face down, and he's, like, pausing for a second. He's like, how injured am I? And then he pops up. He's like, if he's going to take those hits again, we're going to be right in the same place. Where either he's going to be ineffective or hurt or both.
Well, and it extends to one more note on them. They want to run the ball. They talk about wanting to be one of the top three in rushing attempts. Isaiah Crowell got absolutely blown up. Again, like, you cannot run the ball or have healthy, functioning quarterbacks without an offensive line. Well, and you know what? When they had no quarterbacks and no skill players, they had a good offensive line. Now you finally get some of these players in-house, and the line looks to be a shambles. I don't want to overreact, but I am.
Right. It's a couple of series, and that's the thing. If it was a real game, that's only two series out of 10, and it doesn't seem as big a deal. I mean, what a statement by Hugh Jackson. He's trying to make a statement. My first play when I'm back as coach is going to be a 50-yard bomb to Terrell freaking Pryor, and they nail it. That's a good omen.
Remember when the Redskins waited until the actual regular season began before they made their statement.
The thing I'd be worried about RG3, and you're right about all the pressure, though, the interception, there was no pressure on that, and he rushed a throw.
Great catch.
I would say that Gary Barnage could have done a little more on that interception.
And literally the play after Pryor, RG3 fumbles a handoff. And he also had an uncatchable ball that erased what would have been a defensive pass interference, and no pressure on those. So that's three pretty big oops plays in two drives. That's the things he's got to clean up.
That was an odd moment. They call pass interference, and, you know, you're thinking, oh, the drive is extended. But then the ref had to say, excuse me, but by the way, it actually isn't pass interference because the ball was completely uncatchable. That was not the kind of PA announcement you're hoping for if you're a Browns fan.
All right. You ready, Mark? Name all the Great Lakes.
Lake Huron, Lake Erie, Lake Superior, Lake Michigan, Lake Kansas.
Ontario.
I ignore Canada largely.
The biggest Great Lake.
Superior.
Correct.
Holmes.
Mark, we do have some Canadian listeners.
I don't ignore the Canadian listeners, just the land they live in.
Okay. That's important, that distinction.
Yeah.
Yes. Let's move on. Talk more. What did you say, Wes?
Holmes. That's how you remember it. The mnemonic trick. Homes. Like Roy G. Biv for the rainbow.
That's why I went hands.
Or you could just go your whole life without knowing them. That's what.
Well, now you know Holmes. You'll be.
Greg goes nihilistic in a big spot. Stunner on the Around the NFL podcast. Let's move on. Let's talk a little. Let's talk a little New York Giants. We'll touch on some of these teams. Not a lot to get into with some of them, but we should touch on all these different things. And again, check out NFL.com. We had What We Learns up both Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night, and then some coverage, of course, of the Sunday night game as well. And we really do distill it. The Giants played against the Miami Dolphins in the Meadowlands, and bad news, mid-game injuries for cornerback Eli Apple, who strained his leg, and then Mr. Wonderful wide receiver Sterling Shepard, who injured his groin, and of course, no Victor Cruz, Wes, who is now being reevaluated for a groin strain. So your thoughts on the Giants offense?
Well, this game broke multiple Browns games records for most times putting me to sleep in one weekend when I tried to watch it on Game Pass. This game was hideous to watch,
yeah.
And I can recommend it in no way, shape, or form. But Sterling Shepard did have a diving catch near the sideline that was good, and the Dolphins' offense continues to be a hideous embarrassment.
The Dolphins' offense had one first down in eight series during team scrimmage last weekend, and against the Giants, Miami didn't have a first down in their first four drives. Are you worried about that, Greg?
That was ugly. Olivier Vernon put it on his old teammates. I mean, everyone's getting frustrated. Clyde Christensen, their offensive coordinator, says everything needs to be faster. And it just reminds you, a lot of these teams that are with the new offensive coordinators, they're struggling off the bat. That's what happens. I mean, that's what happens. You can't worry too much right now.
Moving on, the Detroit Lions and Pittsburgh Steelers played a football game. Of course, the Lions, Chris Wessling, invested three first-round picks in their offensive line in recent years. But you have to be a little bit concerned, Wes, about what you saw from that line on Friday night.
The worst run-blocking line in the NFL last season, and they weren't great in pass protection either. But Taylor Decker got worked by James Harrison on a strip sack, and he had a holding penalty. The play before that, I think that's your number one concern if you're a Lions fan. And then one of Mark Sessler's favorite players, Zach Zenner.
Zen bomb.
Playing ahead of Stephen Ridley as the power back. He looks like he's going to be in a 1-2 punch with Amir Abdullah once the season starts. Theo Riddick isn't really a runner. He's just a receiver for the Lions.
Stephen Ridley's, you know, he might be, his career might be
ending. He couldn't move last year.
Just because of injuries. He just doesn't seem like he had it. Sammy Coates, who's been a big preseason darling, camp darling. A lot of them had nice preseasons, but Coates had a nightmare game, a couple fumbles, a bobble, was playing in deep into the fourth quarter. I don't know if that's a good or bad, that's a bad sign for him. I'm not sure.
A big knock on him coming into the league was his ball skills at the catch point, and you couldn't feel too great about his hands after that game.
Hey, Wes, let's move to Minnesota, Cincinnati. First of all, 17-16. What a game. Back and forth, who wins, who loses. You never know until the final gun. But the guy I want to talk about is running back Jeremy Hill, who a couple weeks ago on this show, or maybe it was last week, it all blends together, I pegged as a potential comeback candidate. How did he look running the ball?
He only had three carries. He left with a left index finger injury, which he tweeted after the game will be just fine, and he'll play next week. But I thought he looked quicker and more decisive than he did last year when he looked like he was running in cement cleats.
I like seeing Tyler Boyd of the Bengals. All you hear about him that he's a slot guy. He went deep down the field on the down the sideline for a beautiful long catch. If he can be an outside type of receiver, they need him. He's about as important as a rookie receiver I can think in the league just about in terms of they need him to produce and play right away.
Don't forget about Charles Johnson, 49-yard touchdown reception in that game.
Playing ahead of Laquon Treadwell.
In your stable of boys, Zach Zenner, Charles Johnson, who is closer to a master suite?
Well, Zenner didn't have a house or a room in that house for a long time, but I do remember enjoying him last summer. I think he's let back in, but no, come on, Charles Johnson. That's my boy.
I think that Zach Zenner, who led the NFL in rushing last preseason, has overtaken Jimmy Graham, who used to play college basketball. As like the most used.
What about Ryan Fitzpatrick went to Harvard?
Ryan Fitzpatrick went to Harvard.
Jerome Bettis is from Detroit. Did you know that?
That's big Super Bowl. A big Super Bowl 40. The worst Super Bowl of the last 10 years, in my opinion.
Oh, by far.
Yeah.
And also a fraudulent contest on many levels.
That was a bad Super Bowl.
And by the way, big announcement. And it comes from a note in Wes's What We Learned. Fortune favors the bold. Remember that when you take freakishly talented Cardinals lead back David Johnson in your fantasy draft. No risk it, no biscuit. Yes, coming up later this month, 2016, fantasy spectacular.
Look, if it was that obvious to take him, then the guy drafting first would take him in every draft. You wouldn't be so smart if everyone else was on to him. You got to take it bold. Go get the guy who's talented.
This guy's right. And I think it's next week, the fantasy extravaganza. So we better get cracking.
That's what I'm saying. If it was obvious, the crappy owner in your league would take him.
Don't be the crappy owner in your league. That's what we're here for. Mark, you're going to be on the corner, fantasy corner.
I'm going to bring it. I have some factoids and some information to unleash on you.
Ooh, I like that. On me particularly?
No, I mean on the group.
Oh, society.
And the listener.
How about Canadians?
The Canadian listener.
Specifically the Canadian.
Yeah, not the land.
I got you.
Don't care about the territory.
Gotcha. Moving on. Let's talk Greg Rosenthal about Matt McGloin. You're excited about him. The Raiders are in good hands.
Well, this comes up. Yeah, he's the preseason MVP. I mean, he's always in the mix at the end of the year for preseason MVP, whether it's 2014, 15. He's got the celebrations. It was kind of a Mark-like celebration going like that, like pumping his fists in the air.
Oh, yes.
He had the MJ moment a few years ago. When you're watching the preseason, you want to find McGloin.
Story of that game was Brandon Williams, the Cardinals third round.
But you don't want to double down to McGloin talk?
I think Greg covered it.
Okay.
There was a little hyperbolic about his 2014 performance, but other than that, that's fine. Brandon Williams, Cardinals rookie cornerback who had been tearing up training camp. They were very excited about him, and Derek Carr came out and picked on him. 16-yard completion to Crabtree, and then Amari Cooper burned him down the sideline. It was slightly overthrown. Another play down the sideline that was overthrown that Cooper had beat him on again, and Andre Holmes got him on a touchdown. Now, he did some things where he played some receivers tight too, but that's something to watch. He's only been playing cornerback since his last year in college. He was a former running back.
I mean, I almost want to forget. I watched that game, and that became a big narrative that the announcers kept discussing. And by the way, these preseason announcers, is there any player in the league that isn't, you know, zooming towards an all-pro berth? Settle down, preseason announcers. But Williams, I mean,
guys.
I want to give Williams a couple more games before – we kind of – it's so easy to – we're getting our first football one overreact to everyone up and down.
Oh, I don't think he's doomed to be a failure, but I do think there's a good chance he's going to be the most targeted cornerback in the NFL.
Well, and that was the position I talked about it all summer. Wes thought I was overrating this factor, just that they're thin at cornerback. They know it's the position where they've had some injuries, they've lost some players, and we'll see. I do love, though, the announcer for that game, though.
Love him. Well, Ron Wolfley.
Bob Wolfley.
Former
Ron
fullback.
Wolfley.
Ron Wolfley. He used to say, if you need a yard, I'll get you a yard. If you need 2 yards, okay, I'll get you a yard.
Here are some quotes from Ron during that game. He looks like a pretzel. You look like a toothpick.
That was describing Cardinals 6'6", 270-pound tight end Troy Nicholas.
Some guys walk around with a pencil. Some guys walk around with a sledgehammer. He's big into these.
I'm not sure images. The voice is what it comes
Did
down to.
This guy
to
suffer
too.
A head injury.
This is the guy who sounds exactly after like Jesse Ventura.
After a particularly nice throw, you know, you want to talk about dropping a pea into a thimble.
Okay, I like thimbles.
Here's another one on Khalil Mack. Yeah. I haven't seen a linebacker move like that since Lawrence Taylor.
Mm.
That's just really good, you know, praise for a guy.
Well, he played with
he was in that
Taylor.
Era.
Yeah, wow. DeAndre Washington's a guy to watch for some fantasy. Mm. I like the looks of him, the Raiders' backup running back. And
open field juke.
They need someone.
How about making the leap candidate Clive Walford?
Oh, yeah.
Hauling a touchdown.
Tell me that guy's not British, Dan.
Clive Walford?
Oh, maybe.
I think he's more British than Gary Barnett.
I'm Clive Walford. Hey, Gowie, come here.
Wait, I don't know what's wrong with that guy. Speaking of head injuries.
Wait a minute.
All right, let's move to Saturday.
Like a English guy after taking cough medicine or something.
Drinking a lot of that lean. Moving on, let's move to Saturday. And we'll start with there is a franchise now, officially, in the Los Angeles area, downtown Los Angeles at the Coliseum. Their first game, the Rams, they played the Cowboys. And Jared Goff had his first pro action after really an emasculating performance on Hard Knocks week one. Gets to at least do a couple things, complete a few passes, but he was pretty up and down, four of nine for 38 yards, one turnover, got a little banged up, but nothing serious, according to Jeff Fisher. But Greg Rosenthal, it was a man who's got a name that sounds like a star quarterback in a Hollywood production, Dak Prescott, that stole the show.
I thought you were going to say Case Keenum, who sounds like a Hollywood quarterback. How do they get these names? They always come out with quarterback names, Dak Prescott. And
Dak
Case
Prescott
Keenum.
Sounds like the sheriff of Tombstone, Arizona in 1900.
It's a great name.
What did you say during the game? You said he looked like he was playing like a roaming demigod.
A roaming demigod. I mean, there was a point during that game where I thought, hey, we're the Los Angeles Rams. This is meant to be a special moment. 1 second into it, Lucky Whitehead has run for a kick return touchdown to open up your stadium.
I mean, you can't write it that on the return to Los Angeles that Lucky Whitehead, that you give up the opening play for a touchdown and that Jared Goff's first pass is returned or is an interception. It's like the worst omens
Nobody's
possible.
Nobody's going to remember any of that because it's
No,
pre-season.
I know, but it's just like
it.
Right.
And it also, but everyone will forget because Les Snead and Jeff Fisher are about to get massive contract extensions.
That's true. And I bet those will be short-term ones. But to your point, the Dak Prescott news, this is where the preseason can actually be news. And we want to see what does Dak Prescott look like the next couple weeks, especially. But he was very calm in the face of pressure. He handled some blitzes well. These are the things that other rookie quarterbacks.
Ball placement was really good. Like he's doing back shoulder throws with Dez Bryant.
Right, like Goff, you know, I'm not going to get on Goff for that interception because they had a pretty complex blitz, which you don't expect to see on your first snap of the preseason that got him. But Prescott, on the other hand, I mean, Gruden was talking about him looking off safeties to throw it. I mean, he looked incredible. It sounds like he's improved a lot over the last couple weeks.
And you mentioned, Chris, in your what we learned or your comment, your column on Prescott, that they did a very smart thing. They kept Dez out there. They gave him a great group of players to work with. He looked comfortable in his college career, bad offensive line and a lot of issues on his college team, and they talked about him carrying it, that he was that team all alone. And you never know, you think, oh, he's not going to be Carson Wentz, he's not Jared Goff, and then you find these guys in the third and fourth round that just kind of get it. And it's ripe for overreaction. But that game, I watched that thing live and thought, this dude is fun to watch.
Yeah, I'm sure Dallas is not going to overreact to this.
Oh, no.
Let him come back down. If he has a bad second game, people will come down on the wave a little bit. But he played. He did everything.
But he could earn a job. He could be the backup.
It's a week-to-week league. And if he doesn't fall on his face the next couple of weeks, they're not going
to
trade for a backup quarterback.
Don't need to.
It could be actually indirectly bad news for RG3. If McCown ends up staying in town in Cleveland. But we'll see how that all plays out. And by the way, we're about 48 hours away from a Stephen Jones headline. We always knew we had something special in Dak.
Oh, no.
48,
no question.
Maybe 24.
That's a good point.
By the way, on Goff, I just wanted to say, I thought he looked better than his numbers.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the interception. The sack, too, the sack that knocked them out of field goal range, he throws a really nice pass on the play before that J.J. Wilcox knocked out of the receiver's hands. The receiver probably should have held on to it.
What, Cooper? Farrell Cooper? That was a beautiful throw, and that's what you see.
He stood tall in the pocket, and he showed off a pretty nice arm. I thought he looked good.
And I thought, Tyler Higbee, who they've been talking up a lot, they need receivers. And between him and Hunter Henry, who was on the Chargers, the two kind of – relatively hyped up tight ends, I think, showed well and looked like guys that'll matter this year.
Let's move on. Let's talk about the Tennessee Titans, or maybe the Titans, because Exotic Smashmouth was looking good on Saturday in their preseason opener. The Thunder and Thunder. By the way, we've been doing Thunder and Lightning since like Warwick Dunn and Mike Allstott. Tiki Barber, Ron Dane.
Yeah, Dane and Tiki Barber.
Can we find something new to describe a backfield?
It's better than Smash and Dash.
But even that feels a little more
that
fresh at
really
this point.
That never really caught on, Smash and Dash. Do you even know who Smash and Dash is?
I have no clue.
How about like Mark? Big guy and small guy?
Red and Stimpy.
Fatty and Normal. Something like that. DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry combined for 167 yards and two touchdowns. And, Wes, I'll tell you what. First of all, DeMarco Murray, did he pray to God and get his legs back? Because he just ran by everyone on a 67 or a 71-yard touchdown where he looked pretty good there. Derrick Henry looked real good running up the middle, making moves, taking guys with him. That dude looks serious.
All of you Mike Mularkey critics, keep yucking it up about Exotic Smashmouth while the Titans punch you in the face. Bring in the hammer.
Speaking of reading too much into one preseason game.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so hold on. Let the record show. I have been consistently on the Titans since April.
That's true.
Every time we brought up Team of ATL, I have mentioned the Titans as my favorite. Derrick Henry looked phenomenal. You mentioned, Dan, that he doesn't look like a typical NFL running back.
No.
I think he looks like Jamal Charles got into the superhero juice.
Yeah, he's tall, he's big, he wears number 2, and I don't know what's throwing me off. Maybe it's the first time a skill player in a Titans uniform is getting me excited.
That's probably
in like a decade or what, but he just looks different.
He does look different. You don't see a big 6'3", 6'3½ running back moving like that.
You don't expect him to be so smooth. Now, they were crushing these Chargers linebackers who probably aren't going to make the team, and the Titans went out of their way to keep their starters in against the Chargers backups. And I thought
that was for Wes.
I thought Henry looked unbelievable, but you say this is a good day for Mike Mularkey? Give me a break. This was a terrible day for Mike Mularkey. They let the fans call the first two plays. Those were the, you know, two best play calls of the day. Oh. It was a huge upgrade on Mularkey. Those fans gained 60 Good. Yards in two plays.
A great point from Greg, but I will point out that he missed an opportunity to drop what a bunch of Mularkey.
That's fair. I'll say this.
Did Trubisky call these plays?
No, they auctioned off the first two play calls.
No, I mean, isn't Trubisky the Titans play caller?
Hey, it's Mularkey's offense.
Here's in defense of Mularkey, because it's not just the running backs.
Don't take this too serious.
You look at how Mariota ran that offense and the running game and some of the crazy stuff they were doing. The backward handoff. Right. I mean, Mariota looked completely crisp. He's been well-coached, and that's a plus for Mularkey.
This is going to be a fun team to watch. I know everybody likes to crap on the Titans, but they are going to be fun to
watch.
Well,
this isn't that team that we were crapping on.
Well,
it's a different team.
People are still crapping on them because of the Mularkey factor.
We got excited last August. That's all I'm going to say. We got excited last August. Remember all that buzz after week one?
When Mariota played, they were fun to watch.
And they have two legitimate running backs that they did not have last year. I hear you, Dan.
Well,
they got to go do it. But
we'll see if DeMarco Murray is a legitimate running back. I'm not basing it off of one run.
We all played
where
that
he
trade
had
when it
acres
happened.
Of land around him. Like, we'll see when the games start. I think Derrick Henry, this is the type of thing you've never seen him play before. You get to see it with your own eyes.
Yeah,
and he obviously is a really talented player.
But then
player.
Good for them for drafting Henry and adding strength
Absolutely.
Upon strength. They know what they want to be. You need more than one running back, and they went out and got one.
These pre-draft reports that Derrick Henry has no lateral agility
I know,
are
really
laughable.
I was
he's
surprised.
Some, like, LeGarrette Blount clone or something. Give me a break.
Well, it's a reminder that, you know, players improve. Players change.
Or the scouting reports were wrong.
I like seeing Melvin Gordon, by the way, looking
he looked
fried.
Good.
It was a, you know.
That's big for Spice Rack, baby.
Winners and losers this weekend. Winners, Spice Rack. Not only did Melvin Gordon have some juice in his leg, but Jonathan Williams
yeah.
of the Bills played pretty well. That real deep sleeper he
well,
had.
Well, Wes and I spoke about it downstairs. Everybody's like, oh, when's Spice Rack coming back on? You know, will Spice Rack be back? It's the buzz all over social media. If Melvin Gordon runs for 1,000 yards this season, Spice Rack can come back on the show.
Well, it's kind of hard to have him on to talk about anything
he'll
else
do that.
Considering
he'll do that.
We gave him many chances to talk about NFL players, and it was basically eight mentions of Nick Van Exel, one of Melvin Gordon, and three of Jonathan Williams, and that's it.
You know, Greg doesn't like when you dwell on this ugly pass with Spice Rack.
I love Spice Rack. He's great, but we did give him a chance to talk NFL players.
Well, 1,000 yards, which is not a hard thing to do in the modern NFL. That's averaging 60 yards a game over a season if you play every game. That's Spice Rack's ticket back to the Around the NFL podcast. Let's move on and talk about another running back, another reclamation project, Kristen Michael Sr. Gross. I guess he had a child.
No,
Greg, by the way.
More mature.
Oh, Greg rolled his tongue.
Yeah, what was that sound?
That was idiot.
If the listener dials back about 20 seconds, you can hear audibly.
We're going to edit all that.
And we had to see.
No, we're not.
So you are actually turned on sexually, Greg, by Kristen Michael Sr.'s.
I was just making awaken. A weird face because you were just looking at me.
Anyway, away 7 carries, 44 yards rushing. You got Thomas Rawls, who was, you know, borderline phenom before he went down with his injury last year. But all of a sudden, Chris Wessling, it looks like they might have a real stash and dash, fatty and the skinny, thunder and thunder and lumber combo.
Well, if you're one of these ostrich head in the sand fantasy football fans who stops paying attention in week 16,
ouch.
You're skeptical of Kristen Michael because you didn't see his week 17 phenomenal game against the Cardinals and his wild card round game against the Vikings when he looked really good. Mm-hmm. And then that January, the entire coaching staff is praising him for newfound maturity. All offseason and training camp, he's the leader in the running backs room. You could see that this push was coming, that Kristen Michael is a different running back. He's always had the talent, and now they've got a 1-2 punch with Rawls and Kristen Michael. He will be part of this backfield, and you can forget about all those rookies you were hearing a lot about. Maybe C.J. Procise will play on passing downs, but this Alex Collins garbage and the other seventh-round guy, they're not playing, baby.
A little fantasy extravaganza teaser. You handcuffing these guys in a draft?
Hmm. Well, I have Rawls as a keeper in a dynasty league, and I drafted Kristen Michael a month ago to pair with him, so I'm in good shape there.
So that's a yes. If you're in a redraft.
Well, that's a little rusty with advice.
I don't do redraft.
Yeah, but you gotta be able to give out the advice. Would you
Well,
put it together?
I've been doing it for a month. Take Kristen Michael and ignore all
yeah,
these rookies.
I think you could take Michael even without Rawls. You called Terrence West the best running back of Thursday night. I mean, I'm with you. I think Kristen Michael is the best running back of the weekend. He's kind of a good test of
Derrick Henry.
Do you believe players can change at some point? in their careers.
Of course they can.
Of course they can. It happens every year, and sometimes they burn you again and again. And he's kind of like a shorthand at this point for football hipsters who have just like wanted him to be good year after year after year. But there's a lot of reason to believe this is the year. They run block great on that team. People knock that offensive line for the most part. They've done a good job.
And you watch where his early yardage came. It was through that guard center guard window. He was plowing through people, and it was fun to watch. Arrow up on this situation: Charles Johnson, Clive Walford, Kristen Michael, Mark Sessler's Making the Leap columns. Go back and read them all. They are prophetic. I don't care when I wrote them.
I like when Mark pumps himself up. You're not doing it enough. That's good.
Well, I do like, it when it's actually needed to be done.
That was good.
And when it has some meat attached to it.
My name is Clive Walford. I'm going to be a real breakout player of the season. Guy Barnes has got nothing on me, mate.
Do you think when they brought him back that they felt like he's close to turning the corner? Or was it a desperation move and they knew who he was?
When they brought him back in December, it was a desperation move.
Three teams cut him last year.
They saw that he was...
No, right. So I'm saying...
But the narrative could be like
Pete Carroll knew, but it's like, I don't think he knew,
but I think once he was there for a few weeks, then they knew that, hey, this guy's taking it a lot more seriously. He had some very rare complaints. He would not carry the ball in his left hand. That was one. And when...
Diva.
In their Tom Cable blocking scheme, getting from point A to point B is just as important as getting from point B to point C. And he wasn't getting from the handoff to the line and seeing the right holes. And it seems like he's doing all of that now.
Getting canned as a 20-year-old or in your 20s sometimes changes your viewpoint.
Well, hey, by the way, Andy Reid, in this game, like, let's cut down on the quarterbacks. You don't need five quarterbacks all getting five attempts or more. Five quarterbacks is an insane amount of quarterbacks for a game.
Tyler Bray has a spinal injury, so he'll be out of the
game. Make some choices.
I do like, first of all, that game ended on a super depressing Hail Mary with a bunch of, you know, guys that probably won't be on the team involved. And then they cut to Andy Reid, who was on the, you know, hammer end of this Hail Mary on the coaching sideline, and he made a face like, don't care. He couldn't have cared less. It was some of the worst Hail Mary coverage also. It was like, I implore everyone to check it out because they went with like straight man coverage. Usually a Hail Mary is like a crowd on the field. There was nothing. It was just one-on-one coverage down the sideline. Game on the line. It's fun. It's funny. Let's talk about possible calamities for quarterback situations. The Colts, who have Scott Tolzien in line to be the new backup instead of Matt Hasselbeck, who was killed on the field last season. But the former Packers backup was severely outplayed by EJ Manuel in that Colts-Bills game. And coming off a injury-marred season, you a little bit worried there, Greg?
No.
Neither am I.
I am not.
Luck will probably play
this. I tried to watch each game. This was the game I couldn't find any notes other than Jonathan Williams, which we already covered. Our boy.
That Colts-Bills, by the way, Andrew Luck didn't play, and then totally unnecessary, but Jim Irsay decided to take to Twitter and let everyone know one of the reasons why Luck wasn't playing is because Rex Ryan takes the preseason too seriously, which I totally believe in.
Well, that is true.
Yes.
I don't know. By that logic, a lot of coaches do, because they were cooking up some blitzes this weekend in a lot of these games. A-gap blitzes.
Wade Phillips, son of Bum, took to Twitter. He had some issues with people saying that the Broncos are blitzing too much against the Bears. And he made a good point. And again, it shows how football, as big as everyone is a fan of the sport of football, nobody knows what's going on. He like put everybody in their place and used all this football jargon to explain that he wasn't really blitzing. There were things that looked like blitzes but weren't blitzes. Don't talk about what you don't know. That's what he was saying. God bless, son of Bum. And finally, let's move to the Sunday game. And, Mark, you wrote about it on our website. Brock Osweiler looked like a pile of fart garbage.
Wow.
Well, it was a small sample size. I mean,
that's the tweet that we're going to use, the tweet quote. Dan Ames.
He didn't get much done. It was a very, you know, quick audition for him. The best thing that came out of it for them was I thought Lamar Miller looked good in that ground game
did.
For them, but that was also
you look
quick.
Greg.
You know,
I
mean,
yeah, Kenny Hilliard. Kenny Hilliard looked great. I mean, the Texans they
what
ran
about Brock?
The ball. With Brock Osweiler, I just think that look. I think I went out on a limb and defended him last season for the way that he handled a tough situation in Denver. But when you boil it down, some of the same quirks that we saw with the Broncos just absolutely reappeared on field. on the field against the Niners.
I mean, it was like nine plays. It was 3-3 and outs.
Ouch.
Didn't have a ton to prove. But I was watching. The thing that concerned me most, I know this is stupid, and it's not the thing that I usually get into, which is the thing that concerned me the most if I was a Texans fan was the interview with the sideline reporter.
Well, this is not a Greg thing.
No, it's not. But it just got me thinking, like, he is not just learning a brand new offense after slowly learning one offense in his career. He is learning how to become a franchise quarterback and the state of the thing. And I don't know, his eyes and that thing and the way he was talking, it just, I suddenly thought like, oh, this is a lot for Brock Osweiler. It's a lot for him to take on, to learn a brand new offense and be the face of the team. And you could just kind of tell he was trying to be that, hey, I'm the starting quarterback now, and I'm not trying to seem too down and get a first down. It's just a lot.
Wasn't that Dan's analysis of Brock Osweiler at his introductory press conference?
Yeah.
That he was basically trying to be the franchise?
He was trying. Yeah.
Well, I mean, he grew up under Peyton Manning, and I thought that with the Broncos last season, he was, like, dangerously polished in his interviews. And he was extremely complimentary of everyone else, saying everything that a Peyton Manning boring-esque interviewee would say. And I think it's rubbed off on him a little bit.
Hot take.
Tom Savage is real. Tom Savage is real. Tom Savage is real.
Well, three times.
Yes.
For those of you who have not been with us for a couple of years, we were under the impression that when Tom Savage came out of nowhere to be drafted by the Houston Texans, and no one had ever heard of him.
Except,
it might not be
except Gil Brandt, who had been talking him up.
Yes.
It might not be a corporeal entity.
Potentially a hologram.
Right.
Tom
right.
Savage is real.
But he's real because he played in that game and did some things.
Well, he threw a real touchdown. That's something Brock Osweiler didn't do.
Tom Savage is real.
Want a hot take on the quarterback situation?
Sure. I'd rather just play that drop 35 times and then leave, but yeah, go on.
Not only would I rather have Paxton Lynch than Brock Osweiler, I'd rather have Trevor Siemian than Brock Osweiler.
That's, there were a lot of people tweeting that
John
Elway. What, you want me
John
to wait until it's obvious to everyone?
Well, that was all over Twitter last night. That John Elway's never looked smarter, that he probably has a better starter, according to a lot of these people tweeting, in Trevor Siemian than Brock Osweiler.
August 15th.
Osweiler signing as possible, but I don't take much out of three series.
No.
It's just a reminder, of what he did last year, Brock Osweiler.
Yeah, he got benched.
He was not the worst quarterback in this game, though, I'll tell you that much.
Well, all right.
You thought Gabbert was? Well, let's talk the 49ers a little bit.
Gabbert, I'm sorry. We won't spend more than a minute on it, but he comes right out of the gate. He has two easy lobs to Carlos Hyde that would have been positive yardage and set the offense up. Misfires on both. He throws a couple passes downfield that are completely underthrown, throws off his back foot on a big chance to connect downfield, finally gets saved when he hits Vance McDonald, made a good read, hit Vance McDonald, who did all the work on a 43-yard touchdown. It was not a good start for Blaine Gabbert. He is mobile. That's the one thing he showed, but it was ugly.
Not a good night for the Jeff Driscoll will start games faction, though, either.
Is Connor Orr the only member of that faction?
No, the San Francisco columnist said he thought all three quarterbacks will start three games at least.
I'd plug in Driscoll as like a Danny Woodhead type. Guy can move.
Gabbert had a touchdown drive out of two.
Savage is real.
Did they make one of those NFL videos about all Blaine Gabbert's throws?
I didn't see one.
It was ugly. It was ugly.
I mean, he's just doing everything that you thought Blaine Gabbert had grown out of. That's what he was doing.
Those wine and cheese parties in Santa Clara, it's going to be tough this year. It's going to be tough football.
If you're rolling with wine and cheese, it's never really that tough.
That's a good point.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, the win and loss happens, and that rolls right off the back.
All right, there you go. There's a recap of week one of the preseason. Let's now move on, guys, and continue our division-by-division preview in our supersized edition of the Around the NFL podcast. NFC North, Marron. And, Greg, you want to get us going by telling us who are the four teams in the NFC North?
I believe the Green Bay Packers,
yep.
Detroit Lions,
yes.
Chicago Bears,
yes.
And they recently allowed the Minnesota Vikings into the division.
Was it recent?
No. This is the longest standing division. These teams, unlike every other division, have been together forever. It's nice.
Good call, Greg. And all correct answers. So let's, just like we did with the NFC East last week, we're going to go through four different categories to get a better grip on what's going on in the NFC North. So we're going to start with Greg. The breakout star of the NFC North in 2016 is...
I'm going to go Teddy Bridgewater because I'm sick of no one talking to any Teddy Bridgewater this year. And I think he's got a lot of the traits that you look for in quarterbacks. I think he's more mobile. He's better against pressure. His deep ball's not as bad as you think. And he's got a great team around him that's going to make him look good if they're winning a lot of games.
He could throw in Stephon Diggs as another one.
Right. I think you could put a lot of guys on that team. Eric Kendricks would be one. Everson Griffin, even though he's been around
Danielle
forever. They could jump up. I just think with Teddy Bridgewater, it's like I'm guilty of it. We're so used to re-ranking quarterbacks each and every year. It's easy to forget at this point. A year ago, we liked them all better than all the other guys in his class, and it wouldn't surprise me at all just because for him, it's mental. And once he's that far ahead of the pack mentally, I think he can be a guy that sticks as a top 10 type of quarterback.
Do you think he has that type of ceiling?
Yeah.
Big point. It's the team around him that can help him become that player too.
Absolutely. I mean, the line's a little worrisome. It's not like they're loaded with crazy offensive talent, but you have Diggs, you have Rudolph, you have Peterson. That's pretty good.
All right, I will throw one out there. I'll move to the Detroit Lions. And I don't know if Wes is going to agree with me on this, but I'm going to throw out Marvin Jones, wide receiver who signed in the offseason, and some really glowing reports about through camp, about the rapport between Jones and Stafford. And actually, MLive.com, their beat reporter, wrote that he has emerged, Marvin Jones, as their number one receiver, and it's, quote, not been all that close. So we don't know. Of course, we have Golden Tate there, who's had two very nice years in Detroit since he got there. No Megatron, so there is a void of those targets, over 100 targets or close to it, that need to be filled. And Marvin Jones, to me, who I always liked in Cincinnati, can really take the next step as a player in Detroit.
I would put sandwiches that he won't have 1,000 yards this year.
What?
Like
really?
That. You want to do it?
Yeah, I would. I mean, this report that Marvin Jones is the number one receiver, well, I don't think that Stafford has to work on his connection with Golden Tate, so I'm not surprised that he's not going to Golden Tate every time. He does have to work on his connection with Marvin Jones, so that makes sense to me. But Marvin Jones, to me, feasted off of A.J. Green, the single covers provided by him in Cincinnati. I don't know if that's going to be the case in Detroit.
I would take that sandwich. I'd be on Dan's side.
Now I know what sandwich to throw out.
Yeah.
Yeah, make a mental note of that. That's a good one.
He's a talented player.
Mark, what do you think about that?
I have to wonder if anything with Golden Tate, if there's something going on physically with him, if he's being outshone by Marvin Jones, because I would take Golden Tate over Marvin Jones any day of the week.
I like Tate a lot. That's part of the reason why I like Jones, because I think maybe he's a little better than he gets credit for. But I don't know. I just think Jones will be nice. I think there's a little that old Ewing theory dynamic potentially in play with Detroit's offense. Calvin Johnson being out of the picture maybe changes their offense, and they can maybe be a little bit better.
I think Jones has the total skill set of a number one type of receiver.
Does Golden Tate, though.
Who's a number one receiver?
I love Golden Tate, and I don't think he's what teams look for in a number one type of receiver, where he's going to go deep down the field especially and dominate on the sidelines. That's just not who he is.
Who's a current number one receiver with a game similar to Marvin Jones?
DeAndre Hopkins, you know, is a better version. One is one that would pop to mind.
All right, Wes, you're up. Breakout star.
Well, first, let me say that if I was doing the Lions, Amir Abdullah and Devin Taylor, whom Greg, his comment the other night was, that guy's really tall for a sack guy.
He's tall.
Those two guys I like. I'm going to go Kevin White for the Bears, who.
Yeah, Wes.
Top like 10. A personal connection with Kevin White.
I thought he was a really impressive guy at the NFL draft.
Because Wes is white?
No, not alone. For that reason, they actually met. They met.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
He's a good dude. Well, he's a top 10 talent at wide receiver, and I think he's a stud. So, I mean, if you're that talented, you're going to do well. And
as a starter. I guess one of our exercises, I was saying I thought he could make a big impact, but then I did hear some things that he was a little raw and had a way to go. I guess you can't underestimate missing an entire rookie season, how that can maybe mess with your progress, but. All the tools are there. We hear he's just a stud physically.
Yeah, I don't put too much stock in whether he's raw or not. I don't know.
Yeah, but your boy Cutler is prominently involved too.
Can beat writers tell you how raw a guy is? I don't know about
that. Well, Dowell Loggins is involved. That concerns me.
That's a fair concern.
Dowell Loggins and Jay Cutler.
Love it when we get our first Dowell Loggins crack of the show.
A little bit of a dig.
His offense left a lot to be desired in the preseason opener.
That does not reflect well. I know it's just one game, but you got to score a point in the first preseason game as an offensive coordinator. All right, go ahead, Mark. Breakout star.
I like what you mentioned with Diggs in Minnesota, but I'm going to go with the coach of the Vikings, Mike Zimmer. I've been preaching this all offseason. No, I don't think it has to be a player.
Former coordinator.
I think that if the Vikings do what I think they're going to do, he is going to get that buzz and be talked about as one of the best coaches in the league. I think in a short amount of time, he's improved that roster in a way that few teams have been able to do over a couple of seasons. He's mixed it a veteran mix of his type of players that he's worked with before, along with some good draft picks, and the Vikings, they're ready to roll.
I like the idea of Mike Zimmer becoming a breakout star and being like the face of every fashion campaign.
I don't know if it's going to take on that type of life.
One of the sexiest celebs in the country.
I don't think he would want that kind
of GQ.
One last name. Don't sleep on Ha-Ha Clinton Dix becoming a Pro Bowl safety this year.
All right, moving on. The biggest concern facing an NFC North team, and as Greg expertly laid out earlier, there are four of them. Go ahead, Greg.
I want to know, can the Bears be a run-first team with that personnel? Because John Fox desperately wants to be a run-first team. You don't think of them as a run-first team. No team in the NFL ran more percentage-wise in the first half of games last year. And that was with Langford and Forte. No team runs more when they're trailing in the second half of games. John Fox is trying to come back to a style of football. This was under with Adam Gase, but I think he'd still like to do it, where they're going to run the ball. And I don't think they have the personnel to do that. Are they able to flip it and pass a little more with Jeffrey and White and Cutler? Because that's where their talent is. The offensive line, I don't think, is that impressive. Their backfield with Langford and Carey, and doesn't look like Howard, the rookie, is going to make that big of an impact right away. It's not that good. And I just think that sort of recipe is not going to necessarily work for this team. Unless their defense is just dominant, and I don't see that happening.
I will piggyback on yours because I was saying the Bears' offensive line is a big question mark to me. Jay Cutler is going to be terrible if they don't give him time, and it was not a good scene in that first preseason game where they got shut out against Denver with Von Miller, DeMarcus Ware, Aqib Talib, and Chris Harris Jr. all out of the lineup, and a lot of their problems were right up front. They just lost their center for the year. I think if the Bears have any chance of competing in what should be a pretty good division, that O-line is going to have to make a leap, and I don't know if it's going to happen.
Well, I'm going to piggyback off of Greg.
This is trouble. We got to pivot. Let's talk about the Packers. No, I'm just
slow down, Greg.
The Lions and Bears offensive lines, both of them. The Bears offensive line gives up 7 sacks to the Broncos' backups. And you said it. They've got a center problem. They need to go out and find a center because they don't have one. And the Lions – You sink 3 first-round draft picks into a line that can't block anyone.
Well, you could almost extend this to the whole division. I think you talk to plenty of Packers fans who aren't exactly sure that their tackle situation is the best in the league, that David Bakhtiari is just the guy that they're going to have back there for 50 years. I mean, their draft –
Well, it's better than Chicago's situation.
Their draft pick – that's true. Minnesota's still not sure who's going to be their right tackle this year. They're hoping Matt Khalil bounces back at left tackle. Seems like a division-wide problem and a lot of good pass rushers in this division.
I wonder if Johnny Fox will call up a member of the St. Louis Greybeards, Manny Ramirez, break him out of retirement. Isn't he not affiliated with the team? Once upon a time, was a big fill-in at center.
Total John Fox move.
I think he retired, yes, but if they could get him out of retirement.
Little Manny Ramirez.
Kind of like in a Brett Favre-esque move. Go down to his house. He's probably down there. He's fishing Manny Ramirez. You just pull him out of retirement.
He's like, I want the guy who blew the Super Bowl in the first snap of the game.
I want that guy.
He did retire, yes, June 8th.
Listen, he could pull a Jordan. It would be huge news nationally. Mark.
What did he just say? I'm back?
I'm back. Press release. Mark, biggest concern.
I was initially going to go with Jim Caldwell and the Lions coaching staff because I just don't buy into this.
Big on the coaches right now.
Well, you know, it's from a different angle. But I'm going to go with Jordy Nelson because I feel like we're waiting for the healthy Jordy Nelson to show up and be the guy. And that's sort of the linchpin to this whole offense clicking. And he's not on the field right now. I realize it's not a serious injury, but it's the other knee off of what he was dealing with last year. And are we going to get him at full speed out of the gate, or is it going to be this thing that lingers on and on, forcing the Packers to, you know, promote receivers up a notch?
Well, that's fair. I mean, he's 31 years old, so it's not like this is a 24-year-old guy coming back from knee problem and a major knee injury, but it's worth monitoring for sure.
Jeff Janis, we just found out, is out a month to 6 weeks. We'll see if Ty Montgomery steps up. They want Devonta. You're right. I don't think they know what's going on there.
Underrated storyline coming out of the four-team deep NFC North, Greg Rosenthal.
Why are you laughing?
I don't know. Four teams in the NFC North.
It's true. It's accurate.
As with every other division.
My underrated storyline is the Bears defense could be fun. I'm going back to the Bears. I don't know if they're going to be dominant, but I think they could be fun. You think of that outside linebacker group, McPhee, Young, Lamar Houston, and Leonard Floyd, I thought, showed up in that first preseason game, looked pretty good. Made some changes. You know, there's questions in the secondary, but there's some talent there. I think it could be a fun defense to watch.
Wait, that has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
But I liked it.
Yeah, so.
The question is, will they be forced to hold teams to, you know, 11 points to win games? But I do think
they were underrated last year.
Yeah,
good job.
I agree with you on the Bears defense.
I'll throw one out there.
Please do.
Yeah, Greg, desperate to talk about the Packers, so let's do it. Randall Cobb, underrated storyline. Not only was he banged up last year, and at the combine, I remember, I don't know if it was Ted Thompson, but I think it was actually Mike McCarthy, who was pounding the podium saying, hey, listen, don't get on that guy. He battled through a bunch of injuries. He was never right physically. Now not only does Randall Cobb come into a season healthy, he gets to now slide back into the role that is much more suited to him, and he could once again become the best slot receiver in the NFL and have a monster comeback year. I think that Randall Cobb, no one is talking about not only Jordy Nelson returning, but what that could mean for the rest of the wide receiver group, specifically Randall Cobb becoming Randall Cobb again. Underrated storyline.
I like where you went there, because when you first mentioned him, I thought you were going to say that nobody's talking about that he played through a couple of injuries. He could be banged up again this year. Maybe he's just not that good. But I agree with you. When he's healthy, 2014 Randall Cobb was the best slot receiver in the NFL.
Fun to watch, too.
Well, that just got me thinking. You could say that description about a few Packers players. I mean, Clay Matthews was not exactly Clay Matthews, and you can blame it all on the position, but I wouldn't. I don't think he was quite as effective as he used to be. Eddie Lacy, we've talked about ad nauseum, and Aaron Rodgers, despite – you know, Wes, you think nothing of his struggles was his fault last year. I mean, I think he
it's not true.
Maybe not nothing of his struggles, but most of it was.
I think it all stemmed from other things, but he started struggling. He definitely changed his throwing motion and didn't get his feet involved.
Right. There's a lot of great players on that team that weren't great last year.
Wes, up to you, baby. Underrated storyline.
Something that no one is talking about outside of Detroit. What's going on with DeAndre Levy, who was one of the top 10 defensive players in the league in 2014, misses almost all of last year with a hip injury that required surgery. He's on the non-football injury list. He's not missing training camp because of an injury or because of the hip thing. He's missing training camp for some mysterious reason that Jim Caldwell won't talk about. The beat writers know about it, but don't feel at liberty to talk about it. I don't know what's going on with DeAndre Levy, but there are Lions fans who believe he may never play again in a Lions uniform.
Wow.
And the Lions are saying, yeah, we expect him back for week one. They won't tell us anything that's going on with him.
This is a mystery.
I like mysteries.
I'd like to see Wes. Let's fly him out to the city, to Detroit, get you a nice little apartment there, and you just get on this case.
Well, I have a better idea. What's old Frank Cignetti up to these days?
Detective Frank Cignetti, he's on the case.
Not much from what we understand.
He's in the Big Apple looking to clean up a dirty city.
What was the name of the girl he was looking for in L.A.?
I have forgotten.
Rebecca Peterson. Where are you? Frank will get you.
It was one of those three names. It was Saint something. It was
Ellie Ann something or other.
It was a French name.
Yeah.
Finally, Mark, underrated storyline.
All right. Linval Joseph, Sharif Floyd, Everson Griffith, Anthony Barr, Harrison Smith, Xavier Rhodes. The Vikings have a Super Bowl defense in the making, and they're gonna take this division down. I believe in this defense more than any other defense in the NFC right now, and they're going to make my opinion correct by late September, early October. People will be seeing this.
So your underrated storyline is that the Minnesota Vikings have a Super Bowl defense.
Yes.
Have the best defense in the NFC.
Better than the Panthers and Seahawks.
Yes, I believe that is how it will play out.
Interesting.
That is an underrated
I don't think it's
story.
Outlandish or anything. I just think it's interesting.
Things will need to happen.
Is it a little underrated, though, Wes?
It's definitely underrated. Mark came up with a banger here.
Things will need to happen in you know for this to happen, but I believe it will.
They got the pieces.
Then they've been there. They were pretty close to the best last year. Just get a little better.
A little underrated. That's
get a little better.
Just a little
That's
better.
Their motto, get a little get a better. Little.
Finally, time to talk a little Crossroads campaign. In the NFC North, 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1 equals 4, Greg Rosenthal.
Let's go to Detroit and Matthew Stafford.
Ooh.
At some point, maybe it's not even the Crossroads. Maybe you're just the new Jay Cutler. But the whole Jim Bob Cooter phenomenon was real. Their offense completely changed after Jim Bob Cooter was there. You mentioned they were a terrible run-blocking line. They were a great running team after Jim Bob Cooter took over. Top 10 in Football Outsiders in running once Cooter came over. Can he keep that going, and especially in the passing game with Matthew Stafford, and have him be an appreciably better and more consistent quarterback? Because that's their only chance. I mean, I'm listening to the Lions preseason broadcast, and the guy was talking about that Matthew Stafford is a top five talent. If I talk to people around the leagues, and there is no one more talented than Matthew Stafford. I don't know if I quite
buy the strongest arm in the NFL.
Wait, during that preseason broadcast, listened to that too. That was just absolute nonsense.
It was a little crazy.
The local guys, they're doing their best.
I get it.
The regional coverage.
I get it. You're
right. What was the when they threw it down to a sideline report on Friday night? What was it again? We don't even have to name names, but what was the update on a player?
The update was a player had water and hydrated after they went to the sidelines because water and hydrating was important.
August. Get wet.
I will piggyback on Greg's point somewhat. I think there are two quarterbacks who are safe in their jobs right now in this division. Of course, Aaron Rodgers and Teddy Bridgewater. Matthew Stafford and Jay Cutler, not so much. I think Stafford has another year at least where the fire could be under his feet a little bit, even if he struggles this year. Jay Cutler, and I know he's signed through the 2020 season, which is crazy, but at a certain point, next year could come. And if they don't have a good season this year, and let's say either John Fox gets fired and they start with a new look, that could be bad news for Jay Cutler. Or John Fox is told, hey, you got one more year to get this right. That could force John Fox's hand to maybe look somewhere else. But the Bears just seem to be stuck in football purgatory with this guy at this point. And I wonder if Jay Cutler has one more year in terms of being this undisputed number one quarterback before things start to change in his career arc.
Well, I'll do you one better here, Mike. Crossroads campaign is the Bears passing game.
A lot of Bears.
Jay Cutler, all of his guaranteed money is done. They can cut ties with him now whenever they want. Alshon Jeffery, they already used the franchise tag on him. What are they going to do next year? I mean, they're just going to let him go to the highest bidder? I think there's a lot on the line here. Dole Loggins, is he a really NFL caliber play caller? I think there's a lot in Chicago with that passing game that could be – they might have to start all over again.
It's wild because they've already have started all over just about. They had more like new starters on their team this year than I believe any team in the league just about. That's defense and offense. It's insane. Like they are a totally different team than when Fox took them over.
Yeah, I mean, I had John Fox / Jay Cutler as my Crossroads campaign, and I think it just makes sense. I mean, if you're Fox and you're the Bears, you look at what John Fox does historically. He gets your team to the doorstep, then you bring someone else in to take them further. But if they take a step backwards this year, then at this point, I mean, what is left for, why do you keep going with Cutler and John Fox? So I agree with your point there.
Finally, guys, and you could take this wherever you want, but maybe a good way to also say who your winner of this division is. Let's each pick a song that best explains the NFC North. We'll start with Greg.
So you just hear this.
I'm excited.
And you just say, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Return of the G by Outkast. Uh-oh.
That's right, huh?
Green Bay's back. You know, the album before this comes out, it's Equimini, it's great, it's like rappers in space. Oh, okay.
That's how you pronounce it, I always wondered.
You know, ATLians rather, before this.
Yeah.
You know, okay, it's rappers in space, that's great. This one, Return of the G, they're letting you know, first track, this is a different Outkast. This is the old, even better version They're taking over the division. Vikings in second place, Lions in third, and Bears coming last.
I like it. In fact, let's do some more piggybacking. This is my favorite song of 2016, guys. It's Harmar Superstar.
I love Harmar Superstar.
How did I get through the day? And this is Aaron Rodgers saying it. Just listen now. Picture Aaron Rodgers saying this. Oh, what a voice. No Jordy Nelson last year. A Rubenesque Eddie Lacy. A bank.
Zoptig even.
A overmatched and injured Randall Cobb. And somehow, Aaron Rodgers still willed his team to the playoffs last year. But this year, it's going to be all different. He's got all his boys back. And he's just left to think about how did he get through the day last year.
While you're looking up that Harmar Superstar song at home.
Yes.
Lady You Shot Me and Prisoner are two great songs by Harmar Superstar.
I would like to see him live. Interesting dude.
What a talent.
Wes, you're up.
All right. Let's stay on the same note. Green Bay Packers. Murphy's Law type of season. Everything that could go wrong went wrong.
Winwood!
I trust the quarterback, trust the coaching staff, trust the GM. This is a perennial powerhouse in the NFC, and they're going to be back in the high life again. We went with Steve Winwood on this because I know Mark and Dan love some Winwood, but Warren Zevon's version. Check that out.
You should have went with it.
I could have, but.
I think the Packers score 500 points this year, and, you know, they're that type of offense. And it looks like all three of us, and maybe Mark, are in agreement.
No. Well, band of groupthink hobos.
Hold on. What? Second place Vikings, third place Bears, fourth place Lions.
This is.
I didn't say mine. Vikings, second place, and a playoff spot, 10 wins. Bears rounding out the group.
How daring of you.
Yeah.
You groupthink hobos. Roll with it, baby.
Oh, my God. I am too sexy for my cat. It's clear that there's no connection here. I need to hear
yes,
the connection.
Is. Listen.
Last one was I touch myself. Now it's I'm too sexy.
Mark loves his one-hit wonders.
From 1991. All right, Mark, let's hear it.
All right. That's everyone just automatically, blindly putting Green Bay in first place. I'm too sexy to deal with anyone else in this division. Look at me and the Green Bay Packers. The Vikings are going to win this division. I've already mentioned it, and they are a Super Bowl legit type team, and they're going to nip Green Bay. I think Green Bay is going to be much better than last season on offense. I'm not taking any of that away. Mm. But it's just this automatic hopscotching of the Minnesota Vikings, who played tough football last season, and I really believe they're a playoff team again, and they're going to win the NFC North.
I think the Packers have who's the top eight? Five
so
quarterback
who's
of all time here.
Oh, too sexy is everyone just like, look at me automatically putting Green Bay back on top of the NFC.
Wait,
I'm so sexy.
So we're right said Fred in this scenario.
You guys are walking around saying that, you're too sexy for everyone
Have
else,
you guys,
but you're actually
but
wrong.
But he was right. He was too sexy.
No, he wasn't. I watched the video today.
Wait,
he was nowhere near
you realize
too sexy.
That Mark went with Divinals, I Touch Myself, and his reasoning behind that song was exactly the same.
Right.
Well,
he's
no.
Saying, oh, everybody touching
that
themselves.
That was at
so
the expense of the entire division.
But
in this
similar
case,
theme.
Yes, it's similar. It's yes. Hubris that I tire
Wait, so
you're,
of. You called us, you said we were hobo groupthink, I believe.
Groupthink hobos.
So, but your crazy wild take here is the team that lost by 1 point in the playoffs will be back to the playoffs but not be a Super Bowl team.
No, I think they will be a Super Bowl team.
Oh, they're making the Super Bowl. Okay, I'm glad I asked.
You just got Sessler off the fence.
Then say it. Then say that. That's
I
great.
I just said they're a okay. Super Bowl team before.
You okay. said they had a Super Bowl-level defense.
Yeah.
Do you object to the notion that groupthink hobo is an oxymoron?
Okay.
Hobos
Wes.
Tend to be independent thinkers.
Maybe. You don't know how many Good hobos you're hanging out with. Sometimes they all do the same thing. They walk, get on a train together. Give me a cigarette. Give me this.
Yeah, you know. They're losers.
Well, I don't know about that.
A lot
that.
Of conspiracy theories floating around with those hobos.
All right.
They're not losers, Dan. Leave
by the line. Way, Vikings, Packers, Bears, Lions.
Man, we got six more of these.
Dan clearly does not like
I think it, No,
previous.
I like the segment.
You established
like
that last in, week.
I feel like
week.
We got in pretty deep on this one.
Yeah. How long has this episode been? 97 minutes long?
Oh, this is
We're probably. Rolling here. All right. Good talk, though. Hey, listen, it's fun football talk. I'm not saying I don't like the seg. I'm just saying it's a bit of a beast. We'll get it done by September. Hey, I do want to. I want to send one.
You don't have to have that many categories.
Yeah, we can cut down. We'll work on it together privately. I want to send out condolences on behalf of the entire Around the NFL podcast to Mark Brady, who is a important guy behind the scenes here at NFL Media and is a big champion of our podcast and does a lot of great work. His father, Patrick Brady, passed away last week. So just sending out good vibes to the Brady fam in our thoughts. We will be back on Wednesday with another edition of the Around the NFL podcast with a special guest, perhaps. Not a indie rapper, but maybe a woman.
News to us.
All these things are in the air. Monday, Wednesday, Friday this week, we will all be reacting again off the Thursday preseason games as we roll on towards another season of football. Till then, this is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, the Mailman, the Boss, and the Irish behind the glass. Till Wednesday!